And welcome to another Behind the Panels one-shot special. I'm Richard Gray. In this one-shot, we speak to writer and artist Phil Jimenez. Phil's probably best known for several years' worth of work he did on Wonder Woman, the character with which he's most identified. He's also known for Infinite Crisis, his work with Grant Morrison on New X-Men and The Invisibles, and more recently on Fairest. He's also done his own creator-owned work for Vertigo, Otherworld. A chat with Phil about all of these works, along with his advice on breaking into the comics industry, and his thoughts on gay characters in the mainstream. We hope you enjoy the interview.
Phil Jimenez, welcome to Behind the Panels.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Now, one of the things, we've only got limited time today, so you know you don't have to go into too much detail, but one of the things I'm really interested in is how people get into comics, how people get into the industry. And you started out quite young, working for DC Comics.
Yes.
So I'm wondering, what point did you know that you wanted to do that professionally, and how did you go about doing that?
So I realized I wanted to draw comics professionally when I was about 16 or 17. I had been drawing comic book adventures based on my high school friends as cheap imitations of X-Men characters for a very long time, and realized I had a real knack at drawing comics. I knew I wanted to move from Los Angeles to New York City, and decided that I could become a comic book artist, move to New York, and become famous. And so I think, this was about 16 or 17, I realized it was a job. Part of that was because I worked at a comic book store. And in terms of getting the job, I learned from the owner of the comic book store that the person that could give me work was not talent, who we met quite regularly at signings, like Jim Lee and Adam Hughes, etc., but editors. So I went to San Diego Comic-Con, I want to say, good lord, 1986 or 1987, yes, I'm not old, and met Karen Berger. And because, I sought her out, I should say, because I was looking at all the comics that I loved and read monthly, and they were all edited by her. And I realized that my life's goal, my life's mission, was to draw Wonder Woman for her, and I sought her out. And I found her, and I made introductions. And I would, every time she was available at a convention, I would say hello to her. When I moved to New York City, I called her up, to see if I could get an interview with her or get samples from her. To this day, she has no idea why she ever answered the phone or let me up, but she did indeed let me visit her DC Comics and would give me sample scripts to work from. A couple of years later, having done samples, I was finally hired through their new talent department. So the long-winded answer is I knew at about 16, or the short version is I knew that about 16 I wanted to draw comics. I knew that the way to do that was to meet an editor. I single-mindedly pursued that editor until I got work, and then a few years later was finally hired after submitting, I think, 4 or 5 times and being rejected.
You're primarily known for an artist, and yes, that's what you're working at the moment, but I was reading in the last couple of weeks just leading up to this Otherworld. And it sort of finished at a certain point where there could potentially be more. Is that or something like that something you would like to return to?
Well, the Otherworld is currently being developed as a TV show. Mm. So I left Otherworld to draw Infinite Crisis, and when I was ready to go back to Otherworld, several contractual things got in the way of that, and then it sort of prevented me from finishing. And the idea was that, well, then fine, what I'll do is I'll finish it in another medium. I don't necessarily think of myself as a writer. I tend to think of myself as an artist who writes sometimes, primarily when other writers are not scripting me things I want to draw. Mm. In this case, I had something very specific I wanted to explore. I was the only one that could sort of write what was in my head, and I knew that I wanted to create our own project out of it. So I'm not necessarily sure that it is certainly the strongest written piece. I think there are a lot of beautiful visuals, and I actually like the structure, the narrative framework. And I was really happy to find a production company or two now, that were interested in sort of exploring and developing it further. So my guess is if it returns, it will be in another medium, ideally as a TV show.
And because you brought it up, Infinite Crisis, I mean, that was a chance to work on all the icons.
Yes.
Including some darker portrayals of some classic characters as well. particularly I'm thinking Superboy in there. Was the opportunity? I mean, was there ever any doubt or apprehension about your portrayal of any of those characters? I mean, when you're working on icons like that, do you have to work as though nobody's watching?
Golly, that's a great question. The only icons I generally cared about in terms of the way they were being portrayed were Wonder Woman. There's a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff about Wonder Woman's portrayal in that book and the events leading up to it, and a lot of editorial divisiveness and creative divisiveness about what this meant for the character, etc. And I sort of objected to the choices being made, but ultimately it was my job to draw them regardless. So, and Superboy was an interesting case because I didn't quite understand Superboy in the script, and so I needed to be helped along the way. I would call up Jeff or my editor and go, like, I don't get what he's doing right now. I didn't understand what he represented. And it's often very important for me with characters to understand, either in story terms or metaphoric terms, what the ideas they represent. And I find that with the sort of darkening of them, those metaphors get a little muddy, and so therefore it's hard for me to find a character. And I'm a very method artist. Like, I like to get inside the character and draw them from the inside out, and if I can't wrap my head around who they are, it's very hard for me to draw them convincingly or to get them to act on the page. And Superboy was one of those characters I just didn't understand what his deal was until issue 6 of the book. Like, I couldn't grasp how he'd become that character. And then later it was sort of, I understood that it was, you know, he was commenting on fandom and a lot of other stuff like that, and that sort of made a comment is I'm not particularly interested in, but it's funny, he's ended up being one of my least favorite characters I've ever drawn, ever. Like, the more I understood him in my head, the less I liked him.
Well, you're certainly not alone with people's distaste for Superboy in that series, and I think anybody has trouble understanding a DC Crisis until towards the end of it. I guess it's time for me to ask the inevitable Grant Morrison question.
Sure.
Because, your work on that did earn you a lot of acclaim. And I guess what I'm interested in is, what does Grant ask of you as an artist? Probably working with him is like working with any other script, except it's a Grant Morrison script. But what does he ask of you?
I've worked with Grant on, what, 2 or 3 projects right now in the past. So Invisibles and New X-Men are the two that I think of. He asks nothing of me except for that I draw his stories. I think we've had 1 or 2 quarrels in all the years I've known him. He remains easily one of the most brilliant writers I've ever worked with, and one of the writers who writes to my strengths. He's so easy to work for. We have quarreled on sort of look, and a couple of character motivations, but that's it. I mean, it's, you know, particularly on the Invisibles, there was some stuff I didn't get, and once it was explained to me, I sort of changed my approach. The limits of art and color at the time also affected my design and my palette, and I think if I was drawing it now, I would use color and design in a very different way than I was then. But just because we didn't have access to those resources. So things I was trying to create visually that he didn't like, I think failed partly just because it was a less mature, less sophisticated production way of producing material. But I hope that he's been generally happy. I'd like to believe that I've served his work and served it well over the years. I'd like working with him a lot.
Well, just in terms of that relationship between writer and artist, What can you think of some times when you've changed perhaps the course of a book or changed the interpretation of character through conversations like that with the writer?
Oh, I so rarely talk to my writers. I generally have more conversations with my editor. I talk to the writer through the editor more than I talk to the writer. Very rarely do I feel like I talk to a writer directly. If anything, I would think, for example, in my first Ferris arc with Sleeping Beauty and the Snow Queen, there were some changes towards the end, not of words or dialogue, but just of panel design that really sort of it was so interesting to see how if like you swapped a character or put a smile on their face instead of a frown, it absolutely changed the meaning of the words. So there was some you know, fixing of that. But it seems to me, unless I have a terrible sort of ethical or moral sort of quandary with the work, it's not generally my job to sort of go changing things. My hope is to enhance them. And so if I was ever to make a sort of radical or dramatic change, I would certainly talk to an artist. But most of the writers I work with now write pretty darn good scripts. So there's not a whole lot to fix, quote unquote.
You mentioned Fairest, which is, you're currently, the current issues are coming out, you're inking.
Right.
Are you still penciling that?
No. The primary reason to get to ink that arc was because I wanted Steve Sadowski working, because I think he's really talented, and because I wanted to ink him because I thought it would be fun, schedule was such that I had to give up an issue in the middle, partly so it could be here, and a couple of other places. But then he got so good so fast on that arc, I realized that I actually wasn't contributing a whole lot. And that's exactly what I wanted. Mm. He's just one of those guys I think is so talented, and I wanted to see him working back in mainstream comics. And my thought was, well, maybe I can help him, I can still work on Fairest a little bit. My name value, if it has any value, can help out, and I can have, you know, it's, inking is a very different thing than penciling, and so it was just a matter of fun.
It's fabulous. What are you working on at the moment?
I'm working on a lot of strange things, actually, and I say strange because they're strange, they sound strange, but they're really not. So I'm working on a lot of independent stuff, doing a lot of stuff for Archie, which sounds, again, odd, but it's super fun.
There's some amazing stuff from Archie.
Amazing stuff from Archie. And so that I've been doing a lot of work, and a former student of mine is now an editor there. So former student's now my boss, which is kind of crazy. Doing a lot of stuff for IDW, a lot of stuff for Hasbro and the Transformers. I'm drawing lots of Transformers, which is really, really fun. I just did the artwork for the San Diego Comic-Con exclusive for Metroplex, which is great. And about 37 other character illustrations. I just finished some Justice League work for General Mills, the cereal company, and which, again, sounds strange. Like, why them? And it's because their comics, they're going to be packaging comics in cereal boxes. And I was like, wow, 7 million young people are going to be reading or looking at my versions of Justice League. And there's something really powerful about the idea that their first images of those characters will be mine, and we all know sort of what that's like to be imprinted on, like the first comic you ever read, right? So that's actually really fun. Some covers and stuff from Marvel. I know Marvel would like to have me back, thank God, because my last time with them was a big mess. And DC just doing sort of little odds and ends, like I said, this sort of Justice League stuff. Teaching, which has been great. TV development, which has been great. So a lot of little things all over. I guess, you know, dealing with a midlife crisis and figuring out where I belong in the next few years.
Just a couple of quick things. I know we're probably running out of time here. You mentioned the teaching. I always like to ask, what advice do you give your students for getting into the industry?
I give them a few bits of advice. I like to give artists these two or three ideas. One, be very, very clear what it is you want from the industry. Write it down, speak it aloud. I ask my students constantly, what sort of books do you want to do? Where do you imagine them being sold? Who do you imagine buying them? Particularly in this digital age where so many young people take stuff, steal stuff on the internet. I ask them, not for any moral reasons, but practical ones, if you're not willing to buy material on the internet, why would somebody buy yours? So that's one thing. Just really think about what work you're putting out in the world and who's going to buy it. From an artistic standpoint, again, this stuff is now permanent. It's legacy. Think about what you want from your work. Think about what you want your work to look like, how it, you know, it's a reflection of you, your talents, etc. What's your aesthetic? And three, for those trying to get into mainstream work, I say again, be very clear. Don't just say, I want to draw comic books. Say, I really want to draw Captain America. I really want to draw the X-Men. And be very, very clear, because pardon me, then this way you can get your portfolio to the right editors, and you can create relationships with the people who are going to give you the work. And I think that's hugely important. Finally, I just like them to be aware of the business of what we do. Be aware of things like contracts and taxes and insurance and all those practical things which are not fun at all, which are not splash pages of the X-Men or Spider-Man, but which play a heavy, heavy role in the creative choices we make daily. If a company is paying one rate, but you really want to work on this other project and they're giving you insurance, so in America, for example, that's a big deal. That's not necessarily an issue for other countries with socialized medicine, but for us, like, that can make or break an assignment. When you're wondering why a creator will hop from one assignment to another, often there's some behind-the-scenes business motivation, a relationship that is severed, some interesting behind-the-scenes story beyond just, you know, us being flaky freelancers.
One final thing I wanted to ask, and it's probably too big a question for a final question, which is, I guess, there's been a lot of media attention on individual portrayals of gay characters in various mainstream comics the last couple of years. And mentioned Archie, there was Green Lantern for DC, and there was...
The X-Men, The Wedding.
How far do you think we have to go? I mean, what do comics contribute to... increasing awareness of issues that need to be people need to be aware of, and how far do we have to go in the comics mainstream?
Well, it's interesting that you say that. So, trying to make a succinct answer, any sort of representation, positive representation, I think is good. I do tend to think that mainstream comics, particularly mainstream superhero comics, are still a fairly conservative. Not only business, but present a fairly conservative view of the world, i.e. sort of men as sort of strong alphas who are out to sort of protect the world in a kind of very law and order sort of efficiency. And even the characters represented, you'll notice in Marvel, DC, and Archie, the leads are all white men. The boyfriend's husbands are all men of color. The leads all are sort of like... you know, super powerful, very alpha. They're a very specific kind of man. They're a very specific kind of male that is still consumable by straight guys, basically. To me, what will really sort of sound the siren call of change is when it's two minority characters, for example, who are the lead couple. Or when it's the minority character that has the power and the white guy just happens to be his... boyfriend or husband, when sort of race and financial class are tackled. And I'm not sure about here in Australia, but certainly in America, like, that's a huge part of gay culture and gay cultural hierarchy. And once that sort of stuff is tackled, I think progress will be made. Finally on that, also, I think sex is a very interesting question here, because when you marry off characters so quickly, on paper, you neuter them. You're no longer worried about them dating. So you no longer have love triangles. You no longer have to worry about, you know, with Archie, you have Betty or Veronica, and you always have sexual tension. But once you marry off characters, you eliminate sexual tension, gay or straight. So when we have a gay Tony Stark, for example, or a gay, ostensibly Bruce Wayne, like Playboy, who has an active sex life, who isn't married off like that, I think then, like, that will be some real boundary pushing.
Fantastic, Phil. Thank you so much for your time. And pleasure.
Thank you. Oh, lovely meeting you.
And that was our one-shot interview with Phil Jimenez. We need to thank Phil for his time, of course, and also the great people at Oz Comic Con. You can find them online at ozcomiccon.com. They arranged the interview. Phil was out here in Australia for that con, and we're looking forward to seeing the con next year again in Melbourne, Adelaide and Perth. And as we just found out, they've expanded into Brisbane and Sydney next year, which we're very much looking forward to. We'll be covering as many of those as possible. We're a very proud supporter of that con. For all the information about us, you can hit up behindthepanels.net, go to facebook.com/behindthepanels, and for any other feedback, send a message to feedback@behindthepanels.net. We hope to hear from you soon.